trying to get out into the, all three of our member communities and get a little face-to-face time with the folks there in leadership and give them a quick update on what we're doing. There's some concerns about a few things, and I'll touch on those today. I always like to do a quick review for folks that might be on the phone that aren't familiar with our organization. Southeast Alaska Power Agency, also known as SEPA, we're the wholesale power provider for three-member utilities in Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell. We're governed by municipal appointed directors. Many of you have sat on my board. And we manage about $500 million in assets in replacement value. So when we assumed those assets during the divestiture of the four-dam power pool, those liabilities got shifted to SEPA rather than on the local community. So that's a big benefit for you guys. As those assets age, they're 35 years old now, so there'll be a lot of CapEx that's going to have to go with those over time. And that won't hit your financial books, so that's a benefit to you. We own two hydroelectric projects, one in Taiyi, 175 miles of transmission and about 14 miles of submarine cable. We have four crossings with four conductors each. Wholesale power rate's been 6.8 cents for over 20 years. And last year we rebated $2.7 million. That brought the effective wholesale power rate down to about 5 cents. And this year the board's approved an $800,000 rebate. So I like to put this map up just for folks that aren't familiar with our system. It gives you an idea of the large geographic area that we cover. As you can see, we interconnect from Ketchikan to Swan Lake to Taiyi to Wrangell to Petersburg. The one thing I like folks to focus in on this is over this large geographic area, when we have less than a total of 12,000 meters to recover costs on. So that $500 million in assets I spoke earlier, as we make CapEx investment, we have to cover it through 12,000 meters, which isn't much. Topics for today, I'm going to talk reservoir levels, Taiyi Tunnel ROV inspection, and we'll also talk a little bit about the submarine cable inspection we did as well. Swan Lake O&M Transition Valve Measure 1 and the Rollless Rule Advisory Committee. So this chart isn't quite updated. Reservoir levels as of yesterday for Swan Lake were 280.3. And as you can see, the big dark blue line, that's close to where we're at, probably about another 8 feet below that, down to the next line. So that's pretty significant for where we're at this time of year. This is the lowest we've ever been. And obviously we've had a fantastic summer and fall as well. So we're looking forward to hopefully getting a little rain to restore the reservoirs. More important to you folks is the Taiyi Lake Reservoir. It was 1283.6. And just so you know, we've suspended sales out of Taiyi to the south. And there's about 69 days left in Taiyi if there were no inflows that came. So we've done the modeling and looked at worst case scenarios and such. And so that's why we've suspended sales until we get some more inflows. Taiyi also locks up a little earlier. And when I say locks up, I mean freeze up. It comes into snow and it freezes because it's a higher elevation than Swan. Swan will get inflows later on in the year. And if it looks like we're going to run a little bit of short in Taiyi later in the year, we'll ship power north from Swan Lake.
So we're, as you can see, the dotted line on there is where we've, that's our guide curve. And we've really fully utilized both reservoirs this year for the maximum value of the member utilities. Any questions on reservoir levels? I know it's a concern for a lot of folks, and I just want to assure you that we're managing those close. We watch them daily, often hourly, so happy to answer. Okay.
I do have a question. At what point are we at critical level where you can't, where you have to say, communities, you have to go to diesel for a while?
Well, you guys have like 69 days left.
Right.
It's a couple of months, so it's out there. And so the draft levels are down by another 20 feet lower.
Okay.
So you guys have a lot of time. Swan Lake, as comparative to 69 days, has about 10 days left in it.
Okay.
So they've actually started a diesel campaign this week. They'll be burning 24/7 for 5 days a week until conditions change. But they've also drawn harder on our resources this year than they have in the past. So that's part of the equation why Swan Lake's lower than it typically is as well.
If our rainfall picks up to average, will we be able to pick up enough reservoir depth to make us through the winter?
Certainly, yeah, okay. Certainly. That's our whole goal. Okay. And that's why we've suspended sales.
Well, I was just wondering, since we're so far behind the way it is, if we
don't recover
at this point.
So. Yeah. No, our prime objective is to make sure that the northern communities are served with their dedicated resource, which is Tyee. But we also sell a lot of power south, but that benefits the northern communities as well. It brings in a lot more revenue, which we can do in capital investment back into the projects. And it also adds just to the overall efficiency and better use of our hydro resources. So, ROV, we've done a week or two ago, we dove at Tyee in the intake tunnel. Intake shaft went down the intake shaft into the tunnel, down the shaft, the rock tunnel. Portion of it, and I think it was about 7,800 feet. So we dove the whole tunnel. This is in the very back here. This this silver cylinder here is actually the battery pack that goes inside. It weighs about 1,200 pounds. It's a really sophisticated piece of equipment. The plastic base here that's sitting there, that's the actual ROV, about 12 feet long, maybe 3 feet wide. Whoa. And has six thrusters on it and 12 sensors on it, can do radar and sonar mapping as it's going. It's hooked to an umbilical cord too, fiber going down the whole tunnel. So I'll show you some pictures of that in just a minute. So pretty neat. I mean, the actual battery pack itself, they can individually monitor each individual cell in there, and if one goes bad, they can shift that out so their battery life sustains for the whole dive. These are the guys that were setting it up when it got flown into the shop there in Wrangell. Did you?
You said before when you came and talked that they were going to have a secondary ROV on hand in case the first one got snagged up. Did they ever have to do any of that?
No, it was really successful. They dove the 4 hours down the rock tunnel and 4 hours back out, but it took several days to get the rig set up. It takes about 12 hours just to go in and set up the battery system. So they spent multiple days. And here, I believe this yellow spool back here is actually the umbilical that dives down with it. It's neutral buoyant as it goes down, and so they just keep swimming it down there. And visibility is pretty bad, so it's a real knack for swimming the tunnel and not running into things, making sure the umbilical doesn't get snagged up on debris or anything like that. So here I think they're doing a little troubleshooting, and they had one connection, and then they just pulled the whole thing apart up there. This is up at Tyee. You can kind of see it's up on the side of the cliff up there for folks that haven't been up there before. So all this stuff had to get carried in by a helicopter, get broken down into small pieces in order to get there.
You don't mind, Trey? Just a quick point out some aspects of the front of that thing. The four blue pieces that you see in the corners there, those are the special sonar array that they had imported for this project from Britain. Those are actually $90,000 a piece.
Oh, good.
And they rent each of them for $2,500 a day. So it kind of gives you some idea of the value of this thing. I suspect sitting there fully outfitted, I would put it upwards of probably $2.5 million worth of assets sitting right there on that deck.
Good.
So just an interesting little.
Sure, thanks.
Trivia there.
And our management team was up there during this whole process, supporting the gang that's there. You'll see a few pictures in here. So here's the vertical shaft, about 213 feet down. You can see they're standing it up starting at ground level up on the top of the cliff there. And they actually had to modify this ROV in order to, they cut part of it off and remounted it on the sides in order to, for it all to work. Here's entering the gate slot. Yeah, this thing's really tight. And like I say, it's about 12 feet long. So when you get down to the bottom of the shaft, you have to actually turn and go into the tunnel. We actually came up and did a preliminary ROV dive just to make sure that this could fit. They had some really high precision underwater measuring devices hooked to their original ROV to make sure it would fit. But pretty cool project all in all. So then once they get down the first couple hundred feet, then they have to go in and they go another 100 feet just to get in the tunnel. So over 300 feet of hoisting and maneuvering this thing just to get it so you can actually get in the tunnel. And you see them lowering it down there. This is the control station that they set up on top, and this is where they actually drive it from, and then they monitor it and take notes and stuff all along the whole pathway. So just quick preliminary tunnel ROV findings. Generally in good condition. It's 35 years old. It's never been dewatered since construction. They did find, I'll say, three minor rock slide areas and one boulder. And the rock trap at the very, very end before it enters and transitions into the steel penstock actually appeared to just have mud buildup and no rock. So all that's actually pretty good news, I think, for 35 years. And we don't know if the rock slides occurred 35 years ago or if occurred since then.
Trey, did we see any evidence of a blowout from the original dewatering that when we had the process go?
Well, I mean, they actually put pillars and lined that area. Yeah, so they actually had to go in and make repairs from the damage that occurred the very first time that they drained it. We've since revised our draining procedure, and we think they actually probably drained it too fast.
Right. I guess what I was wondering is, was there any other damage that was noted after that? It's looking good.
I think so far we're pretty confident. These findings are just preliminary, right? So we'll get a full report once they get back, fully analyze the data, and put together a formal report.
What's the diameter of the tunnel? You're saying
it's about 10 to 12 feet on average, I would say.
And how significant are these rock slides? Are they just small?
I think I heard they were like 1 meter high, maybe 3 meters wide, or something like that.
Something like that. They considered them to be pretty insignificant.
Oh,
considered.
Cool.
Yeah. That's great news.
And so. Almost zero vis down, right? So they're looking at essentially almost what you would look like at maybe on your fish finder would be a good comparison of what they're kind of going by.
Gotcha.
So I won't go into too much detail here. This was the submarine cables. We dove that, and we still have some work to do on the inshore sections that they couldn't reach with the ROV setup that they had. We'll be doing that next year probably, but for the most part, the submarine cables that serve the whole northern area up here, they're in good shape. They're 35 years old, and we didn't see any pending failures, so we're pretty happy with that. Like I say, though, we still have a little bit more work to do there, too. So just a quick on this, Swan Lake transition, Ketchikan Public Utilities unanimously voted, or the city of Ketchikan, I should say, and council unanimously voted to begin transition of Swan Lake O&M over to SEPA. So we've done some preliminary meetings, and we're targeting to complete that by the end of the year. Ballot Measure 1. Everywhere I've been speaking for the last 6 months, I've spoke on this issue. I'm not going to tell people how to vote, but I just encourage people to get educated on what's behind the language that's in the ballot. The initiative that was submitted to the state went to the Supreme Court. If you read the fine print, this will clearly increase costs. And I'll speak mostly from an energy perspective. It's going to be increased permitting. We already have robust FERC processes. It takes 7 to 10 years to license a hydro project. And this is just another layer on top of that robust process. Plus, the projects that are pre-existing are exempted until you go to relicense. And both of our projects are going to be up for relicensing in 2030 and 31. So we'll have another layer of cost on top of relicensing projects that have been established for 50 years. So read the fine print. Make sure you at least know what you're voting for. You know, and if you have questions, there's some great sectional analysis on Stand for Salmon website if you're interested on what some of this stuff really does and how it affects you. I'm really concerned about our local communities and how it might affect you. Potentially won't shut down, but won't allow hatcheries, some of the new provisions in there. If you're going to change culverts, you might have to go through a permitting process. You might have to prove that there's not anadromous fish in those water bodies. So any freshwater body, doesn't matter where it's at in the state. If you go to the website that I mentioned before, you'll see there's a very diverse group. It's just not big oil or big mining that's opposing it. There's a huge diverse population that is realizing that maybe there's a different way to do it, maybe more of a surgical approach rather than one size fits all. Roldis Rule Advisory Committee Administrative Order 299 established this. For folks that were interested, I presume that they hopefully went to the meeting last night for the U.S. Forest Service. They did touch on this a bit. There'll be a 13-member committee, and I've applied for this, and I do appreciate your support and a quick turnaround on that. The selection process was very high speed. They put the administrative order out and then closed the application process 7 days later. So that list is currently at the governor's office and to be announced here shortly. And for people that aren't following this, this is to develop a state-specific roadless process. My position is as I want to represent energy interests on that committee, but I also live in Southeast and I'm concerned about economic development. Affordable, abundant power is the cornerstone of economic development in Southeast Alaska. So hopefully communities have the opportunity to develop their resources to be successful. And I won't go into that. Thank you. Kept it short, boss.
You did great.
Thank you very much.
Any questions on stuff? I know I rolled through it pretty quick, but.
Thank you. Good.
You guys have a tight schedule. So.
Good news.
Well, I just want to mention again to the community that SEPA has managed to keep its wholesale rate. What are we at,
6.8 cents. Effective wholesale power rate's been about, it was 5 cents last year.
5 cents, which is just amazing that for the last 20 or 30 years we've been able to do that. So that's some excellent work. Thanks, Trey.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we're clear on that one now, Kim, right? Can we move on to roll call, please?
Assembly members Gilbert, Howell.
Here.
Clarabee.
Here.
I said Howell.
I wasn't but sure.
It's okay. Decker. Howell.
Here.
Prasanka.
Here.
And Mayor Jack. Okay.
Okay, great. We'll move on to persons to be heard, please.
None
signed up. No persons to be heard. Move on to amendments to the agenda. Does anybody have an amendment to the agenda? Okay, hearing none. Any conflicts of interest? No conflicts. Moving on to consent agenda. Can I have a motion, please, to approve the consent agenda?
Move to approve the consent agenda as submitted.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I do want to add that on the minutes from August 28th, the meeting date I had listed as August 8th, so I fixed that in the permanent minute. So.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. No discussion. Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
Prasanka?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry. Cross it up. Howell?
Yes.
Larrabee?
Yes.
Decker? No. Vice Mayor Prasanka.
Yes.
Sorry, I got that one all mixed.
No problem. That's fine. We're winging it a little bit here. Number 7, Borough Manager's Report.
Mr. Mayor, I do not have anything to add to my written report as in terms of an update this evening. So if any of you have any questions regarding, it's a fairly robust report, please let me know, and I'm happy to answer any questions regarding that.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions on the borough manager's report or comments or anything that they would specifically like to ensure that the community is able to hear over the radio? Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Kim, borough clerk's file.
Other than Tuesday, next Tuesday is election day. I don't have anything. We have absentee voting going on right now. So far, I have 61 ballots that have been voted or sent out by mail, which is excellent. I'm really excited. So, so I have absentee voting 9 to 4, Monday through Friday, and then, of course, Tuesday the 2nd, 8 to 8, at the Nolan Museum or the Nolan Center is voting all day. So.
Fantastic. Well, it's nice to hear that folks are getting out to vote. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Kim on the borough clerk's file? No. Mayor and assembly business. Any reports from any assembly?